Class 34, and welcome to our episode of SAS, Space Power Discussions. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Timmy Haas Wang with the United States Air Force, and I am pleased to be joined today by two of the Air Force's finest warfighters. They are well-suited to discuss our topic today as they embody many of the test god character traits, and let's welcome them onto the show.
Hey, everyone. My name is Brian Velika. I'm a major in the United States Air Force. I go by the call sign AMP. I really have enjoyed reading this book just because I have a lot of experience with test pilots. I never went through the test upgrade myself, but at Nellis Air Force Base, working at the weapons school, integrated with the test squadron and all of the things they were doing with the Strike Eagle. So I've got a lot of experience with aviators that are doing tests throughout my career. So it was great to read this book about the test community.
Hello, I am Major Matthew Lowe. My call sign is Bandit, also United States Air Force. Haas, I'm flattered by the test gods comparison. Hope I've got the grit of the test pilot, though my cockpit skills, I think, are more simulator hero than Mach 3 material. To begin, all opinions expressed here are our own and not necessarily representative of the Department of Defense, the Air Force, or any other affiliated organizations.
All right, awesome. This episode is actually one of a series of discussions that we and our classmates are recording about space power and space strategy as part of our spring 2025 Space Power course at the School of Advanced Air and Space Power. Our topic today is the book Test Gods, Virgin Galactic and the Making of a Modern Astronaut by Nicholas Schmidl. The book takes us through the dream of space tourism of Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Galactic, and the various test pilots who made it all possible. The author takes us on this journey through the eyes of Mark Stuckey, a Marine test pilot with aspirations as a child to be an astronaut. Nicholas Schmidl spent 4 years embedded with Virgin to write this book. He writes for The New Yorker. His work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, Slate, and Washington Post, to just name a few. His first article, Getting Bin Laden, was a National Magazine Award finalist. He also writes on topics from Russian arms trafficking to book forgers, wrongful convictions in Chicago, and former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. He was also previously a Ferris Professor of Journalism at Princeton at one point. If you don't know what that is, it's a visiting professor. His other book is To Live or to Perish Forever, Two Tumultuous Years in Pakistan. Schmidl is obviously a well-respected journalist, very experienced, and has several big-time publications. We have the pleasure today to dig into his book on space. So to kick us off, before I turn it over to our guests today, we're going to talk briefly on what this book is about. The book chronicles Virgin Galactic's quest to build a commercial spaceflight company, which was led by Richard Branson's vision of making space accessible to ordinary civilians. And Schmidl gives us a behind-the-scenes look on the development, the setbacks, and the emotional tolls of this modern space race. It takes us through the legacy of test pilots, Virgin Galactic's ambitions. The project revolves around the development of Spaceship Two, which is a reusable suborbital spacecraft designed to carry passengers to the edge of space. Branson's dream was to create space tourism. We walk through the beginning of the book with the personal story of Mike Ausberry, which is one of Virgin Galactic's test pilots. His deep love for flying and his family life and his dedication to the program are all detailed in emotional depth in the book. Tragically, Ausberry loses his life during the 2014 test flight with the aircraft breaks apart, marking the program's darkest moment for Virgin Galactic. The book also covers some of the emotional tolls on the families of these test pilots and the risks that they take to make these space dreams available. There were several technical and financial challenges that Virgin faced. And then finally, it takes us through the idea of ethics of space tourism and what does that mean for the space race. So Bandit, with that, what did you think about the book?
Yeah, thanks, Haas. Going back to what we talked about earlier, AMP, with your introduction, I also was somewhat involved in the test enterprise, though kind of adjacently over the past couple of assignments. I did get test qualified and dealt with a little bit of developmental and operational tests, bringing new munitions online into the remote aircraft world. So this book was a breath of fresh air, especially after wading through strategy tomes all year throughout all the different courses we've been going through. Test Gods gets personal, it's raw, it's emotional, and it's a stark reminder that the frontier of space isn't just shaped by policymakers or brass, but by test pilots with families, egos, scars, and an insane tolerance for risk. What hit me hardest about the book was how Schmidl frames risk as emotional currency, not just a line item on a mission brief like we're used to. He writes that risk was the currency that they traded in, the test pilots, and everyone had to decide on how much they were willing to spend. That's visceral to me. In our world, risk often gets sanitized into stats or doctrine, but for these pilots, like Stuckey, like the Haas alluded to, it's gut level, it's cultural, even spiritual. Schmidl puts us right in all of those test pilots' head throughout the book, showing the toll of chasing spaceflight dreams in a commercial outfit. It's less about checklists, and it's more about what it feels to strap in to carry that ambition or to get sidelined after you're pouring your soul into it. And then one odd thing I'll add, Stuckey's story also hints at a broader space power angle. These pilots weren't just testing a spaceship. They were testing the limits of human agency in a domain where machines and money increasingly call the shots. Just thinking like SpaceX, where that's a lot more automated than something like Virgin Galactic is getting after. And that tension feels eerily relevant to our military debates about autonomy and control. It's a hell of a read.
Yeah, Bannon, I agree. Schmidl went in a very interesting direction by focusing on the test pilots and the risks they incurred in this race to space. Some of the pilots made a bet amongst themselves of who was going to be the first one to reach space. And you have that internal drive to push the limits, push your own boundaries, push the boundaries of the aircraft that they're flying or what they're testing in order to continue to move the ball forward in this advancement towards space. And that is the nature of man type of thing that I think these pilots really embodied and showed throughout the book. We read another book, When the Heavens Went on Sale by Ashley Vance, that focused primarily on the founders of space companies like Planet, Rocket Lab, Astra, and Firefly. Vance looked at the founders like Chris Kemp and Peter Beck. And what I think Schmidl did was focus on the next layer down from those founders and really provide some insight into some of the other key players needed to make the race to space work. I'll let Haas jump in with some of his thought processes as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting points that both of you guys bring up. And Bandit, I'm sure we'll cover later on these autonomy and control and these military debates. But I think another interesting point that Schmidl brings to the reason why I think he chose to focus on these test gods instead of these founders is his father was actually a military pilot as well, who actually crossed paths with Stuckey back in the day when Stuckey was a young lieutenant going through training. So, and Stuckey had always admired Schmidl's father's pilot attitude, if you will, and the way that he flew his jet. So I think it gave him a personal tie to why these men are important. All right, so next point. Bandit, did you feel the book conveyed this American narrative of risk-taking, frontierism, and boldly trying new things for the sake of making it into space? Is it the next frontier?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. What really hit home for me in this book was how they tied personal ambition to this bigger, almost mythic American narrative. Virgin Galactic isn't just about building a spaceship or a business. It's from Richard Branson's initial thoughts on all of this. It's selling a story, the idea that space isn't solely the domain of NASA or military elites, but something a civilian, a regular dreamer, someone like Stuckey, when he was dreaming as a child, could touch. That's frontierism rebooted, and it's less about covered wagons, more about carbon fiber space airplanes. It's American exceptionalism dressed up in a commercial branding, and Schmidl captures that through the lens of these test pilots who embody that restless, risk-it-all ethos.
Yeah, I can jump in on that as well. I think the book highlights that this company is focused on rockets that are not just operated with computer-based algorithms and code, very similar to the Rocket Lab's Blue Origin and SpaceX type of missions. And while Virgin Galactic and Branson's vision is to use test pilots to operate it, that brings in a very different dynamic, as we've already alluded to. This dynamic shift is those risk tolerances seen, and as you're talking about, Bandit, with how these companies may operate. And I think that's solely why the author Schmidl got involved in the first place when they had the crash in 2014 and the death during one of their test flights. It garnered the attention of who these characters are that are just in the middle of the desert flying at the edges of what aircraft can do outside the performance envelope that these aircraft are typically operating in, and what they're trying to achieve and why. And that, I think that's a huge shout out to the test pilot community and their mantra that he highlights in the book of fly, test, notate, and adjust. Give it back over to you, Bandit.
Yeah, so back to what Haas was talking about earlier with Mart Stuckey and his story as a young child. He's the beating heart of this book, so we experience his life from the very earliest stages on through almost up to present day. And he's a rugged – he is an individual that is rugged individualism incarnate. This isn't just some guy who likes to fly fast planes. He's a guy who's been clawing towards the stars, kind of like what you said, Haas. Since he was a kid, defying every no in his path. So Schmidl shares how Stuckey, again, as a young boy, was trying to be an astronaut, and his dad's like, no, that's impossible. No son of mine is going to serve in the military, and that's required to be an astronaut. Therefore, you won't be one. But most kids would have shrugged and moved on. Stuckey, he ignores that. He joins the Marines. He kicks off a wild, winding journey. Yeah, he's applying to NASA's astronaut program multiple times, gets so close that he can almost taste it, but then ultimately has to shift towards test piloting at NASA instead. So afterwards, he ends up flying for the Air Force for a little bit, takes a detour selling mortgages outside of the service before going on active duty during the Iraq War. And then there's a cryptic chapter, I think, that speaks to kind of all of our background where he's working in Nevada in a black program, and Schmidl has a couple instances where he's trying to pull details out about what he's doing in Nevada. Obviously, Stuckey doesn't clam up or open up that vault at all, but it's keeping us as well as Schmidl guessing throughout the book, and it's pretty pretty interesting way to keep us all engaged. In this mysterious gap in the tale, proof of just how much he's pushing to keep the door open. He's finding any capacity, any program that he can get into potentially that has a vector back to space. And by the time he's at scaled composites, flying versions spaceship on the first three powered flights of the test program, you see a man who's not just chasing a job anymore. He's chasing a vow that he made himself as a kid. And when his best friend dies in that subsequent fourth crash, Stuckey's still gearing up for the fifth. That's rugged individualism. He's gritty, unpolished, relentless, even when the stakes turn deadly. Strategically, though, this whole story has teeth. When Branson rolls out a space plane with global fanfare, cameras flashing, celebrities booking tickets, and the stock price is going through the roof, it's not just a flight. It's a cultural flex. It shapes how the world sees space. Less as a battlefield or a science lab, more as a playground for human aspiration. And again, especially with rocket labs, planet labs, SpaceX that are all pushing the envelope kind of simultaneously and bringing all of this to the forefront in worldwide culture. That's soft power at work, and it's a dimension of space power we often miss. And we've talked a little bit about it in class, but not a whole lot when we're locked onto the more traditional frameworks.
Yeah. I think that is a good example, Bandit, of how the privateerism and capitalist mindset brings some heightened risk and potentially some dangers into the space just because the celebrities are booked, the tickets are booked, the money is flowing, and you're asking these humans, these pilots, to take increased risk to make these things happen. And that's where you get maintenance logs that are looked over. That's where you get some of the structural integrity of these aircraft bounds being pushed. There was an example in the book where after a flight, on a post-flight, they looked and saw some delamination of the horizontal stabilator or stab, and they felt that they were within moments of that thing tearing off in flight, and everyone, you know, I think it was three or four people on board would have died at that point. And they just kind of pushed it under the rug and said, we'll fix that for the next flight, and didn't make a big deal out of it because they knew that that would bring fear to investors, that would bring fear to follow on people paying to take the next ride. And that's the private enterprise aspect of it, I think, is very dangerous, as well as the risk specific to Virgin Galactic because they're dealing with humans as opposed to just a computer-based algorithm like SpaceX and Rocket Lab are doing where there's no humans involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as we see kind of the story of Virgin Galactic and the commercial space industry taking over the human aspiration aspect of space. In the 60s and the 70s, I remember NASA being kind of that image for Americans and the American idea of going to space. And they were the ones viewed as pushing the boundaries, despite the fact that they were still a government organization. So these narratives, if you will, are very interesting. And I think the concept of this frontier myth comes back when we're talking about space and space development, especially on the commercial side. You know, it is a concept that has been used throughout American history to shape a narrative to garner support and population. You know, as Slotkin points out in his book that we read, A Great Disorder, and I'll quote him here, the myth of the frontier is our oldest national myth, that we Americans are the descendants by blood or acculturation of those heroes who discovered, conquered, and settled the virgin land of the wild frontier. And I think we tend to shape that narrative of space domain along similar veins. We learned through several of our SAS readings on the power of narratives, and I think Schmidl tries to amplify this narrative by creating American heroes as we reach for space. Banda, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the way Schmidl frames the test pilot world is both reverent and honest. On one hand, there's heroism, sure, but there's also ego, politics, and burnout. Stuckey isn't a clean-cut action figure. He's got many layers to him, and he's a complex individual. There's professional jealousy, conflict with leadership, tension over recognition all throughout the story. It's reminding me that the human factors behind innovation, especially in the frontier tech like commercial spaceflight, can make or break a program. And I think we are honestly seeing a lot of that play out in Virgin Galactic up until present day. And I think there's a lesson from military leadership too. Just because someone has the right stuff doesn't mean the organization will use them well. Stuckey in particular, he spent years proving himself, but ultimately in the story ends up sidelined. That's not a failure of talent, it's a failure of institutional alignment. And it makes you wonder just how much potential gets wasted in our own system in the military because of the same dynamics.
Yeah, those are some good points, Bandit. We'll circle back on your last comment there about wasted potential in relation to bureaucracy later on in our episode. But before we get there, though, Amp, what do you think Schmidl's argument is for the book?
I mean, the book's a good story. It's a great story, but it's definitely an airplane book. It's got a sick jacket cover. I think that's the main reason why we chose the book. Test Gods is an awesome title of the book, and it's very similar to that Ashley Vance-style book versus the Klein or Dolman books, which are much more academic, structured to explain policy, strategy, and precisely answering an argument. This is much more of a story, as Haas alluded to. That's not to say there isn't some argument in the book. And I think Schmidl is certainly describing the antithesis of SpaceX and that athletic experience that Virgin Galactic is using to get the space on the backs of these test pilots, these test heroes. And then, as I already kind of alluded to, that difference of commercialization and privatization of space and what that means with risk in getting to space. I think these test pilots are unknown heroes. In the book, it quotes that Mark Stuckey is the modern age Chuck Yeager, where Chuck Yeager pushed the bounds of breaking the sound barrier and flying these very unusual type of aircraft to test the limits. And that's exactly what Stuckey has devoted his life to. And that's a very honest story that I think that Schmidl was trying to tell.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell Schmidl's a seasoned journalist with rare boots on the ground access, and he talks a little bit about that in some follow-up interviews that he's done after the book was published. But he doesn't just dump facts on you. He pulls you into the cockpit, the simulator, the tense boardroom standoffs. Take that moment that you were talking about earlier, Amp, where the engineer spotted the delaminated stabilator, and then the boardroom goes quiet as the engineers are weighing safety against what the boardroom executives are trying to maintain in that narrative we kind of talked about earlier that they're selling. But by the end of the book, you're not just reading about Virgin Galactic. The reader, and I think I speak for all three of us, we're all rooting for the flawed, driven people behind it to ultimately reach space and achieve their mission. The storytelling muscle is something that I think the space domain desperately needs. Sure, strategy lives in concepts and frameworks. Like you pointed out, AMP, Dolman, and Klein, we have them for that. But the stories, to me, they stick. They hit you in the gut and they linger. It lines up with what we read in Alistair MacSkimmon's Strategic Narratives earlier this year. He argues that shaping public perception and policy isn't just about data. It's about crafting a tale that you get people to buy into over and over and over. Virgin Galactic's doing exactly that, or at least they were up until the past couple of years, spinning spaceflight as a personal, aspirational, something that is almost inevitable. It's not a government program or a military operation. It's a human dream with a ticket price that they're selling. That's strategic value that we can't ignore. It's soft power with a rocket engine nudging the world to see space as a shared frontier and not just a war domain.
You guys remember like 12 or 13 years ago when that dude Bumgarner jumped out of the weather balloon at like 100,000 feet or Red Bull?
Yeah, Red Bull. Yep.
Holy crap. I mean, that's like extreme risk. And I remember the national attention that he got from that and, you know, Red Bull being the main sponsor. But that drove, I believe, a lot of continued research, development. It certainly inspired a lot of young minds of what is in the realm of possible. I mean, the dude jumped out of, you know, 100 and some thousand feet. And that's exactly what Mark Stuckey is doing here if he was to go on, you know, the national tour after the successes of Virgin Galactic. You know, he's not necessarily there to make policy decisions, but he's there to inspire. And that's exactly what Chuck Yeager did. And that's exactly what I believe a lot of young minds see something so awesome as going fast, going to space. It's just a normal dude. Obviously, he's got lots of test experience and has gone through all the different weapon schools and whatnot. But, I mean, this dude is doing exciting stuff, scary stuff. And, you know, that's definitely inspiring people.
Yeah, Amp, I agree with you there. And I think this inspiration piece is kind of important right now in the development of the space domain. As we see right now, most of space is focused on satellites that are doing information transfer for the most part, dealing with things that are within Earth. But, you know, we've got to have these heroes that inspire us to be able to reach for the stars and push that frontier myth to look for what's next, right? Develop in technology to get us there to outer space. So, you know, right now there may not be a huge economic benefit that we can see in space. I know there's talks of rare minerals out there, but, you know, we currently don't have the technology to go up there and do anything about it, or, you know, having discussions of whether or not we should and whether that is just for the common good of humans. But, you know, without these inspirational heroes, these test gods, individuals like Stuckey who are out there taking on these huge risks to push the boundaries of human life, I think, it you know, we find ourselves stuck in a place where we're just doing the same things. And, you know, it's definitely refreshing to read these stories like this.
Yeah, here's the flip side, though. So Schmidl shows Virgin flirting with a trap that Tammy Biddle nails in her Rhetoric and Reality in Air Warfare book that we studied earlier this year. She calls out big shots in that book like Billy Mitchell and Hugh Trenchard for hyping air power as this slick war-winning magic bullet, victory from the skies, no mess, no stress, while brushing off the messy stuff, busted tech, human screw-ups, ballooning costs, and ultimately human lives that are at stake. Virgin's Space for All pitch has that same glossy sheen, much like SpaceX does, and Schmidl doesn't let it slide. After that fourth flight crashes and kills a pilot, they still charge ahead with the dream, no brakes. Then AMP's stabilator issue that he brought up earlier, the delamination is spotted after a flight and checked out on the down low, swept under the rug, keep the mission alive, and investors smiling. That's not just a glitch, though. It's a red flag blinking, yet Virgin's still out there selling seats like it's all good. Schmidl anchors it in the pilot's real deal, Stuckey's guts, the grief, the strain, so you can't miss the gap between the hype and what's actually hitting them. You walk away from test gods not just knowing that space is better, but feeling the heft, its heart, Stack that up against something like Klein Space Warfare, which it's solid. Dolman is solid, sure, but they're not haunting me at night like all these stories are.
Yeah, I want to jump in and just talk quickly about the engineers that are involved in this. And again, I think it's slightly different because it takes on larger ramifications when you're using human life. It's yep. It's different than what SpaceX and Rocket Labs is doing. And I mentioned already this mantra of fly, test, notate, and adjust. And in the case of the fourth flight, it was then crash and start again. And one of the engineers, Mike Moses, he saw the crash as a chance to start again. And what that meant, and I'll quote this, he says in the book, Moses told his engineers to reassess everything from the rocket motor and the landing gear to the feather system and the seatbelts. Nothing was sacred. It felt liberating to sketch on blank pages. And that's after human life was taken, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think that's a like that mantra of fly, test, notate, adjust, you know, crash, start again. That's very similar to what we've all instructed at weapons school of that perception, decision, execution, error. What type of error was it? Was it a perception error? Was it a decision error? Was it an execution error? All right, identify it and move on. And I think that just takes different weight when you've got, you know, these human test pilots that are at the crux of it versus just, let's adjust the algorithm a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think these stories like these definitely have a national strategic impact as well, right? The first impact is the SE is the prestige that it provides to the United States. Even though Virgin Galactic is a private company, it is a U.S. company. And their aspirations towards space tourism contributes to the prestige as the United States as a country that continues to reach for the stars and achieve these impossible human dreams. And, you know, what's very interesting, too, is Richard Branson is a British citizen, but he decided to register Virgin Galactic in the U.S. And I think that's also another positive impact to U.S. strategy as it brings in foreign investments into the United States economy. I think the last impact I think companies like Virgin Galactic brings is competition in the commercial space sector. And that competition will drive innovative technology development and ultimately reduce costs for the U.S. to get into space. You know, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think the competition thing is the biggest, Haas. You've got different avenues of extremely smart people, big investors, all looking at the problem of space, whether that be getting payloads to space, space tourism, space whatever. And they're looking at this problem, all coming up with their own solutions. I mean, you have SpaceX, Rocket Lab, Astra, which Ashley Vance talked about, all using very similar rocket types, rocket structures, maybe differences in size, but I mean, they all look fairly the same. And then you've got Richard Branson hiring this company to look at the problem very differently, and they come up with a pilot-flown airplane, basically, which is drastically different than the other rockets. And they're achieving some sort of effect getting to space, but they're solving the problem differently. So the competition aspect is just how many people can I get into this space and look at it with a different lens of how to solve the problem and get after it.
Yeah, Amp, I think you brought up in class recently about this commercial space sector. I think you're right in that, you know, the commercial sector can take on these risks that now the government, U.S. government, doesn't need to. And on top of that, with the less bureaucracy and the competition to try to become a prestigious company that brings in revenue, I think that's overall goodness for the U.S. What do you think, Bandit?
Yeah, absolutely. Commercial outfits like Virgin Galactic are absolutely a net win. They inject fresh innovation, move fast, and keep the U.S. in the lead, which we have seen time and time again, probably over the past 10 years. But Test Gods makes one thing clear. Regulation in this domain is a tightrope walk. The government needs to step in, but they need to step in with precision. We don't want to choke off that entrepreneurial spirit that these companies have that make them tick. But at the same time, we can't ignore these serious lapses like the stabilator delamination, even though it ended up being investigated and hasn't happened in any subsequent test. But I think back to like something more recently with the Titan submersible and Ocean Gate that went through all of that deep sea exploration is almost very similar to commercial spaceflight in regards to the minimal amount of regulation that's going on right now. And that unfortunately led to deaths as well.
All right, gentlemen, I think we're starting to run out of time, but I want to circle back real quick on this last topic here. Previously, we've had these discussions of wasted potential and bureaucracy. You know, we've alluded to the dual-use nature of space technology, and I believe that there's a consensus that the rise of commercial space companies is a overall net gain for the U.S. based purely on the competitive nature of our capitalist society. So I'm interested in both your thoughts on where should government regulation draw the line to provide some form of control to establish the norms and behaviors that we want to establish in the space domain.
Yeah, I think that government bureaucracy from a safety standpoint is great. It's necessary. We need dreamers. We need people that are willing to execute outside of those boundaries. And that's the only way that we can advance our technologies. There's the quote that you only know how far you're willing to go if you push yourself past your limits or something like that. And that's exactly what this domain is. Bureaucracy is okay in some avenues, but the commercialization of it allows for dreamers to try new things, and we need more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shaping norms and behaviors is a tricky topic that we haven't really been able to find a really good answer to in seminar. But we want space to remain that frontier where risk takers like Stuckey can thrive, pushing the edge like the X-plane test pilots before him. But ultimately, if we don't strike the right balance, we risk falling behind to actors like China who are not waiting around for consensus.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think to wrap up for our listeners here, some of the main things I think takeaways for everybody to think about from space policy and space domain perspective is this frontier myth and the narratives that we build surrounding that, the risk to push the boundaries and inspire what's next and what's possible, as well as the commercial competition and the overall goodness that comes out of competition. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the SAS Space Power Discussions and listening to these two test gods share their thoughts. Until next time, thanks for listening.
See ya.
See ya.